Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Are you there?
I am here. I'm live. Live across the nation.
Well, across the world.
Yeah, across everywhere. That's right. We've got people
wherever
listening
people
all around the
have
world.
Podcasts. I don't know who's going to be listening across the world, though, because this is a very specifically Australian subject.
Yeah, but, you know, we've got people listening in America and people listening in Germany and other parts of Europe.
It's true. It's probably Australians, I guess, in other countries.
Expats,
or
probably.
people who just love chat about elbows, maybe.
Could be. People who have really dry elbows and they've now finally stumbled across, you know, this solution, which is, of course, the Bellbows product.
I'm pretty excited to talk about this episode.
Me too. Really, really, really excited.
We're sort of past the point where it's competition and now we're just like hanging out with the band. Should we jump straight into it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so excited to jump into it. Let's go. Can you feel it?
And it's quarter to the hour here on Fruity Alexia Radio. That was... I could never do back announcing on a radio. I'd be so terrible at it. Yeah, I always forget what I'm saying halfway through a sentence. So
This is why you could never be on radio. But I am a perfect consummate professional. So anybody looking for somebody to come on the radio show, look me up, but don't hook up Alex.
Well, I could be the, you know, the sidekick. That's fine.
That's true.
You know. So we were trying to think, firstly, you know, basic radio DJ skills. My name's Alex.
And I'm Alexander.
We're trying to think of a name for our fans during the week, weren't we? Because we've got, you know, upwards of four now, I think. Oh, plus my parents, I think.
Oh, there you go. So six.
And, you know, everyone's got their little... Like My Favorite Murder, which is one of the big podcasts, they've got their murderinos. And, you know, My Dad Wrote a Porno, which is one of my favorites. They've got the Blinkers. Pop stars have their own little names as well.
Yeah, like Lady Gaga's got little Monsters. And I think Taylor Swift's got, has she got Swifties? Is that a thing or have I made that up? And I think Nicki Minaj has got Barbs.
Barbs?
Well, I think it sounds different with my accent, but I think they're like Barbs. I think it's
barbs.
Like, yeah, I think it sounds better with an American accent. I'm not entirely sure where the barb thing comes from. Yeah, and Beyonce's got the beehive or the, I don't know, I never understand the Beyonce thing, right? Because is it the beehive or is it the bayhive? Because it's written B-E-Y hive, like bayhive. And then I'm like, is it like the bayhive or the beehive? I'm confused. And she's Queen Bee and I'm like, but I don't get it.
Why didn't they just leave the Y off? Like, I'm sure it's beehive, right? But they could have just left off the...
It would have to be. I'm so confused. Beyonce, if you're listening, it's like, Papa, can you hear me? Beyonce, if you're listening.
I love it.
I know. What are we going to call our people?
Well, we sort of thought Fruity Alexia Podcast. I've been labeling all the audio files FAP.
Yep. Love FAP. So hashtag we could have FAP.
Yeah, we could have some fappers. What do you think of that?
I think
is it
fappers,
too much?
I don't know. I mean, Look, you just told me about my dad wrote a porno and their stands are called blinkers. We're a show about a reality show forming a girl band, and we've got one called Fappers. I'm not really sure that it's – I don't know what's sort of more off. I think probably Fappers is given the content we're doing. But sure, Fappers, if you think Fappers is going to work, if you think Fappers is going to take off, fine. You know, what's it going to be called? The Fapper Club.
We need something where the URL isn't already taken, I think.
If we scream, if we do a live show at like a comedy festival or something, if somebody's stupid enough to let us book a slot, and, you know, we scream from the from the stage, show us your fappers. Where are all the fappers out there? I mean,
it's like. I take your point.
I don't know about screaming. Firstly, I've never screamed, show me your fap, show me all the fappers. So I think it's a bit late in my life to start screaming about fappers now, really.
Okay. Anyway. Well, let's put that one down as a draft and we'll keep thinking about that one.
I think we should pop that in the car park. We'll park that one for a bit and see what happens.
All right. Should we talk about the show then?
Let's.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Okay, well, we're halfway through the series, basically. Well, not quite, but plot line-wise, we're halfway through the series. So we've no longer got any contestants, and it's all just the winners now, all winners from now on. Mm-hmm. We see them move into a share house in Sydney together, and we learn sort of about the routine that will make up their new life as pop stars. The band introduced themselves as if it was a dating profile, which I found quite weird, and I'm sure we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
And then straight away, we're sort of into the drama around who gets the biggest room in their share house and who's going to be sharing a room. Michael Napthali then does a barbecue for them as the band settle in. They're starting the new routine the next day, which includes the gym, dance classes, and then recording. And as the narrator says, 15-hour days become the exhaustive norm. And they also begin learning their hit single, Poison. And as they adapt to life as pop stars, surrounded by cameras and, in this case, an uninvited spider.
Alexia. This is only just the beginning. So, sorry, what am I saying? Oh, okay. Sorry.
You wrote this one down. This is great. Okay. This provides material. If anyone listens to the end, you'll realize that I put a little blooper at the end, which is purely me trying to embarrass Alexander.
Piss me off.
When stuff like this happens, I'm just glad because I go, yes, it's another little thing I can, jab the screwdriver into the ribs.
When things like this happen, I just think, fuck, can't I adult better than this to stop this from happening? But anyway, what I was going to say was, so you look, the narrator says at the very, very beginning, you know, this week, it's only just the beginning. And I think it's, it feels so ominous because, you know, in retrospect, we know how quickly the whole thing sort of happened and burnt, you know, burnt hard and fast. And, you know, it's really interesting because all the girls are thrown really quickly, you know, into this Sydney house, which to me, I think looks like a terrace home in like Newtown or something. And
yeah,
it's quite,
well, it's a massive one as well. Like if only I could have lived in one that size when I was their age. You know, I was probably not living with that many people. Or maybe I was. Yeah, I think I was living with the same amount of people but in a terrace house half the size.
And you were in Surry Hills. That house in Surry Hills had like 74 people living in it.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that bad. I don't think anyone had to share a room. But
don't you think that's so weird? Like, so they had these five girls and they all had to share rooms. One of them got a room by themselves, but it's quite strange. And what else I found quite weird was the house was really weirdly furnished. So like there was a stack of magazines in a fireplace behind Katie when she's sitting at the dining table. There's like some weird blanket or carpet hanging on the wall behind Chantel at one point. When they do a walk through the house, there's like a mini trampoline standing up in the corner. And like there's houseplants everywhere. Like here's the question that everyone wants to know the answer to. Did somebody live there and they were just like squatting?
Yeah.
It's so weird. Like
it was Jackie O's house. Jackie O was in a tent out the back. But the other thing that's weird is like I think it's Chantel opens up her suitcase and then looks around and there's nowhere to put the clothes. There's no chest of drawers or cupboards.
Yeah, it's really weird and it's quite a strange setup. And like, you know, Sophie opens her bag and she's got this like, she's brought that stupid blue phone from home that we saw in the other episode that you marveled at.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is this relic of the 90s, you know, when things were sort of a really bold color and a bit like they were plasticky and synthetic and like it had been inflated by magic somehow. And she must love it because it's pretty much the only thing she unpacks.
It is. And I love that at that time, Michael Napthali says to her, he goes, what else have you got in there? Have you packed the incinerator?
Great reference, Michael.
Stupid. It's like you've packed everything, including the kitchen sink. Oh, he's just taken it to a new level, the incinerator. Yeah. I love it. But what I thought was really weird is that all these girls, you know, finally these five girls have won, you know, in inverted commas, they've won. And they're coming together in Sydney. It's the first time they've actually seen each other. They haven't actually seen each other since they were announced. So I don't know the timeline of this. You know, I was talking about it earlier.
Yeah, they all must know who else is in the band already, but I guess it's the first time that they – like they wouldn't have had that much time to hang out during the auditions probably, and even then you wouldn't know
– who was going to get in.
Like I'm going to hang out with this person because it's definitely going to be – yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully I thought so too.
Yeah, I wonder if they all got on.
It was so strange and, you know, with the whole like – the whole like living together thing is such a strange concept. Like why did they need to live together? Obviously, it's for ease of picking them up and dropping them off and they were moving from interstate and stuff. But it's such a weird – I guess it's trying to force them to have a rapport and build a relationship and a culture between them. But it's quite strange. The whole dividing rooms thing is really weird. I mean, you've got two 19-year-olds and three 23-year-olds or something.
What a nightmare.
It's quite strange and, you know
– I think it's a really bad way to sort of get things going actually because you're going to – like if you – you just need time away from people if you're going to be doing 15-hour days with them. Yeah. You need to then go away and just let off some steam without having to, you know, mind yourself around your work colleagues.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, you know that that house is only going to have had one bathroom. You know, it's an old, not updated terrace home. You know, it's going to have one bathroom. Those five girls and whoever else obviously lives there, you know, that's a lot of people to go through one bathroom. It would be annoying as shit, you know.
Well,
traditionally
the Surry Hills terrace house would have a little outhouse in the backyard. So
oh, yeah. I can
there would
really
be the option to go and sit with the daddy long legs.
I could really see the girls of Bardo going out into a courtyard. Go to the toilet. Don't think so.
I reckon a couple of them might.
Do you?
Yeah.
But I do think it's you know, it's interesting because early on, you know, we really see a glimpse of Chantel being quite a sucky Lala.
Yeah, we do, don't we? This is when they're arguing about who gets the big room, right?
Yeah, it's quite strange. And, you know, oh, she's sort of sucky Lala's about, oh, I wanted the big room. I wanted the single room. And Sophie draws it and she's like, oh, it's okay, you can have it. It's such a weird thing to be. You can already see that that's something that whilst the rest of them clearly didn't mind outwardly, they would have minded. I mean, everyone would have ideally liked the single room.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
To make such a song and dance about it was quite immature, but I guess she was 19, you know.
Yeah.
I was doing a bit of
extracurricular research the other day and sure. I think it was a podcast with Belinda on it and she suspected that maybe Chantal was a bit older than she was letting on. Have you heard this rumor?
I actually have heard this rumor. You're going to have to refresh my memory though.
Well, that's pretty much it. I think good. Yeah. I think Belinda just sort of alluded to the fact that maybe she was a little older than the lower third in the TV show was letting on.
Interesting. There's no proof to this though, right?
No, currently no proof. So it's speculation and potentially lies, but no,
okay,
not lies.
Cool. But you'd have to assume, look, if she is older secretly, it's a bit fucking pathetic that she can't even make her own bed and do her own sheets. You know, she's like, oh, somebody else, my friend does this for me. It's like, are you fucking kidding me?
It does look like the first time she's moved out of home and, you know, I probably couldn't do that for myself.
It's technically the second time she's moved out of home because remember she moved to Sydney last week or just weeks ago in the previous episode, they said.
I hope she's held on to the room. Anyway, we'll get onto that later.
Okay, so the first day of them all living together in this house, you know, after they've divided the rooms and yada, 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 you know, Sophie's sitting on the floor and she's using a hairdryer to straighten her hair, you know, which is a skill that girls don't have to worry about anymore because they've got hair straighteners. Thank you, GHD. Oh. And then weirdly, though, when they all walk out the front door, her hair's in a ponytail and she's gone from wearing a black top when she was using the hairdryer to now she's in like a blue top. So I don't know. I'm gathering
continuity
it was obviously
error.
Shot. Yeah, continuity error there, people. It was obviously shot in a different day. Clearly they weren't using the continuity people from Home and Away who were like experts at it. They were obviously using some amateurs for continuity. Yeah. And, you know, the thing about this sequence where they all go to the gym, you know, the narrator's kind of giving you the spiel about, you know, why they have to, you know, the girls must get fit and stay fit. Yeah. It's just this weird like they're all such slim, you know, to me anyway, they look fit. Not that I know that how somebody looks is not necessarily a reflection on how fit they are, but,
yeah,
you know, they're all young women and they appear fit and there's this comment about the girls must get fit and stay fit. It's such a weird thing. And, you know, this whole sequence of them all, you get this sort of like little montage of the girls working with a personal trainer, you know, lifting weights and, you know, in unison at the same time or, you know, bench pressing and exercising and aerobics and all this kind of thing. And it's quite reminiscent of like, you know, scenes out of like Private Benjamin or like the Spice World movie when there's this
or Clueless.
Clueless.
Yes.
Clueless.
I've got another Clueless reference in.
You're going to get one in every episode. There's a weird thing that filmmakers and TV producers have about seeing women exercise. It's this strange thing like, oh, you know what would make really great TV or you know what people will love to see? Women being put through their paces like with a drill sergeant. It's a weird recurring thing. I don't get it.
A couple of the shots are a little bit creepy. Like someone's
definitely
on their back doing leg curls or whatever they're called when you face down anyway. And there's like close ups of someone's bottom, you know, which it's kind of like, is this why they're showing it?
It's a bit strange. It's like, why in every kind of thing do you have to see women doing this? I mean, I don't know if there's necessarily.
Do we blame Olivia Newton-John maybe?
I don't think you can blame Olivia Newton-John for anything and you need to wash your fucking mouth out for that.
Okay.
Do you know Olivia Newton-John is the name I give the people at Starbucks every time I go? You really? Know this, don't you?
No. Oh.
Yeah, so when I go and they say to me, can I have a name for your order? Every time I say Olivia Newton-John. And they look at me and it's a combination of either somebody looks at me and they've got this kind of shitty look on their face and they're like, really? Or they're like, oh my God, that's so funny. Lol, you're so funny. And I'm like, yep, cool. And then if they've kind of given me a positive reaction, I'll say to them something like, you know, Olivia Newton-John, they'll give me a cute reaction and I'll say something like, but my friends just call me Liv or Livy, so you can just write Liv.
Okay.
And they get a little chuckle or whatever, and then they write Liv or Olivia or Olivia Newton-John, some of them will write. And then they – because I love it. I love it when they have to call out the orders and the baristas haven't actually read any of the cups before they've been written on, before they've made the coffee. So they just make the coffee and they pick up the cup and look at the side and they go, Olivia Newton-John. And everybody else in the cafe just turns around to look.
Really?
And then there I am just kind of cruising up to get my copy.
Oh, poor things. Imagine expecting to see Olivia Newton-John and you turn up.
Getting me. Do you know what? We should do a twofer. Olivia and I should rendezvous. She can give my name and I'll give hers. And, you know, finally the two of us will meet.
Oh, dear. Other coffee outlets are available.
Yeah. Well, I do it to everywhere, not just at Starbucks.
Anyway, I was thinking because they go on – after they've been to the gym and after they've done a dance class, they then go on to record. And can you imagine just like doing like 8 hours? Can you imagine even doing like half an hour of exercise then having to go and sing? Like I'd just be pooped the whole time.
I mean, I presume the whole thing of getting them to the gym in the morning and then dance classes and then going to the studio at nighttime 15 hours later. Mm. Obviously, there's a production schedule here and it's all about maximizing time, minimizing costs, all that kind of a thing. But it does feel very brutal. I think it feels really brutal from straight away. Yeah. But then I guess it's just trying to protect them for what it is, you know, what it's going to be.
Yeah. I would have left after the first gym session, I think.
You would have left like halfway into the gym session.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They go to the recording studio later and we meet Michael Zamowski.
We do.
And I think he's the real hero of Bardo, you know, because what's really great about Poison is just the juicy harmonies that are in it, I think. And it seems like he's the one who's gone through and, like, clearly it's a really quick, like, production timeline and he just has to, like, make really quick decisions. It's funny to hear, like, it's the first time we hear the run-through of Poison.
Mm, yeah.
And it doesn't quite sound like they must be just reading it off the sheet music. And it doesn't quite sound how it does in the recording. Like the lead line sort of sounds a bit different. And I think it's all down to Michael Zamowski. Like he's clearly like massaged it in the studio and, you know, made it how we know it today.
Well, I think Michael Zamowski, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think he may have written it or co-written it, so as well as producing it. So I think probably helps in the process if you've written it, recorded the demo, you know, sold the song, and then you're part of the process in producing it. Probably. Yeah. You know, helps. And I think at one point he even says, you know, that's great. I think I'm just going to get you all to sing the whole song the whole way through. And then I'm just going to use bits and pieces that are right for certain parts of the song. And then he has a little bit of a chat to the camera and he says, you know, they've all got really distinct voices, especially when you turn the beta up. And it's like, yeah, okay, great. Which, you know, is probably, I don't know much about it, but I imagine that that's like one of the most like entry level basic kind of sentences you could make about audio engineering for recording singers. You know, they've all got really different voices, especially when you turn the beta up. It's like, okay, babe, calm down. Like, we don't really care. The average teenage girl and gay guy watching at home don't give a shit about this. But anyway.
And I get the feeling he's more of a musician than, like, you know, he's the producer and there'll be engineers running around doing the actual technical stuff.
And, you know, it's quite strange too because all of a sudden, you know, you're in the studio with the girls and they're singing and then he's there too, Michael Zamowski, and they're singing the song. But what's quite strange is there's no announcement that from the narrator that the girls are in the studio singing, you know, practicing or singing their debut, what will be their debut single or record or singing an album track called Poison. You hear it over and over again, but there's never any mention of the song title or anything about it.
Yeah. I mean, come on, marketing team, get on it.
Yeah, it just seems like such a missed opportunity, especially because, you know, they were on a tight timeline. You'd think, I suppose by this point, maybe they hadn't decided by the actual, like which song they maybe were going to pick. Maybe that's why.
I was thinking too with Michael, like it's funny how over the last 20 years, I reckon there's been a bit of a change where the producers of songs are really sort of being pushed to the front. And I don't know, I could be completely wrong, but I feel like you're getting less one-hit wonders because the person who's actually making the guts of the music is now, you know, like the headline, and then it will be like featuring blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you mean like, do you mean like Calvin Harris or David Guetta?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, with, you know, and C is just the sort of tag along. So rather than it being like a Sia track,
it's a Calvin Harris track with David, with Sia. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And
I mean, I think that's fair. And I think that's also fair, maybe even of the time of pop stars and Bardo, because, you know, you think a lot of those hit songs for Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, you know, Britney Spears, they were all written by Max Martin. And, you know, I think there's a whole bunch of different people that kind of were pretty consistent at that time.
And so when people don't, when the, you know, the band, quote unquote, doesn't come up with goods over and over again, you know, meanwhile the producer's in the background working with another act, making a hit over there, I think that's where you get this one-hit wonder culture from, I reckon.
Totally, 100 million percent. You know, it's the sustainability of somebody singing on your track is the tricky thing to master, isn't it? You know, it's capturing the magic once is seemingly quite easy, but repeating it is nothing entirely. I think it comes down to great producers, as you say. Yeah. I do think, you know, hearing all the girls sing Poison in their various, you know, parts and harmonies is actually really lovely. And, you know, I think it's a great point to kind of really hear them as actual singers, because they really, they're singing a song that up at this time you didn't know. You'd never heard this song before. You know, in previous auditions or previous episodes, you'd heard them sing, you know, little bars of Mustang Sally and Celebration or Happy Birthday, Mr. President, or some other random, you know, song.
Yeah.
And, you know, Don't Leave Me This Way or My Heart Will Go On or whatever. So, you know, you knew those songs. So you were hearing these girls sing parts of songs that were so familiar to you. So this is the first time we're hearing them sing a song that isn't familiar to us, that we don't, at this point don't even know the title to. We're just sort of listening, watching in our lounge rooms, you know, listening to the girls sing this song. We're really hearing them blend and their harmony. And individually you're hearing their talent, which I think is actually a really interesting, it's actually probably the first time where you're kind of like, oh, they actually are talented.
Because yeah,
exactly. In the first episode, you're kind of like, well, I guess they've all got a great look and they all can sing, but I don't know, can they? I think they can, you know. Mm. And now you're like, no, they're actually really fantastic.
They get, what's the other guy called? Tommy Farragher.
Oh, Tommy Farragher.
And he's been flown in from the US to produce one of the other songs, which is, or it's, I mean, it's unclear, but it seems like he's there just to produce.
He came in to produce the second single, which is I Should Have Never Let You Go.
Oh, that's it.
And
yeah, yeah.
He also co-wrote it or wrote it. So I Should Have Never Let You Go was on the album and it was the second single. And he also produced the third single, which is called These Days.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Neither of which are my favourite Bardo songs, by the way. So I think that's something we've got to revisit when we get to talking about the tracks and the
albums. Oh, right. Oh, that's funny, because they're actually two of my favourites.
I know, and this is the thing. Those two songs divide Bardo fans. So we're gonna get into it.
We can come back to that, yeah. Anyway, I don't feel like he really wants to be on camera, but, you know, he seems to know what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, I had a bit of a Wikipedia of him, and, you know, not that you can believe everything you read on Wikipedia, you know, but they say on the show that he's a big deal, you know, from the US, although they don't give you a backstory about who he is or what he's done or any of the big names he's supposedly worked with. You know, his Wikipedia says that he wrote some songs for Dusty Springfield and Taylor Dayne in the 80s and the girl group Eternal in the 90s. And then there is actually a whole little section in Wikipedia about him coming to Australia, having signed with Warner Music in the mid-90s, coming to Australia to write and co-produce I Should Have Never Let You Go and These Days, as part of the Australian reality TV series Popstars and the creator of the girl group Bardo. And then post that, clearly he's gone back to America. And he ended up producing songs for the Glee soundtrack and the Glee television show, including Darren Criss's cover of Teenage Dream. So he obviously had some success as well before and after, but you're right. I don't think he seems like he particularly wants to be on camera, but he does seem really hands-on, which I think is really nice and also really necessary because, as the narrator says, it's the first time any of these girls have been in a recording studio. I'm not entirely sure that that's true because I've heard from Belinda since in other podcasts or YouTube things that she had been in studios before.
Right,
and I think Tiffany has before as well because this point Tiffany's not in it,
She's not there yet, yeah.
Yeah.
But Katie as well, I feel like she'd been doing some stuff in London or something.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, so I don't know. I wasn't really sure if that was quite an accurate statement from the narrator, but in any case, I think it's great that Tommy is really working with them on their, you know, little riffs and different bits and pieces to add some personality and really help them get to the point that he wants them to get to, which I think is probably really nice for, you know, first timers and new people.
Yeah, there is a point where he's just standing over someone as she's singing. Is it Sally? Or I can't remember. Like right beside her, which I'd find super intimidating.
Well, I thought the funny bit about him was when he arrives, Michael Natfalai kind of goes, oh, you know, and I'm going to totally paraphrase and probably not do it justice, but it's really awkward and funny. But Michael Natfalai is kind of like, you know, hey, Tommy, look, did you get the emails I sent you?
Do you think he's fanboying a bit?
Like, did you get the emails I sent you? It's like, it's such a strange thing because, you know, it's like, I don't know, I was wondering if maybe, you know, maybe Michael Natfly was and maybe Grant Thomas management were new to emails at this time.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because it was like, did you get the emails I sent you? And it's quite cute really, I guess, because because the whole you know, concept of an email was new. But on the
have you been online since you arrived?
Yeah. And also don't forget they didn't have internet on their phone, so it would have had to have been a computer and everything. So it's funny to listen to it in backwards, you know, to be like, oh, well, maybe he's actually been traveling, you know, for 48 hours or whatever, or 36 hours from LA or New York, wherever he's come from, and he actually hasn't read the emails I sent you, you know. But I will say,
he would have had an Apple Newton or something.
Yeah. On the topic,
niche reference for people who remember.
On the topic of cute things about Michael Natfalai in this episode, I'm just going to go out and say it. His new haircut that he has in this episode, I think he's like borderline babe for the time.
Really?
Yeah, okay. For the time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I was pretty. I mean, much nicer cropped look.
Yeah, short and cropped. Yeah, that's right. He sort of lost a bit of the Brit poppy mullet that he had.
The ducktail. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, there you go, Michael.
Bet you didn't think that, did you? That's not what you thought I was going to say today.
I bet you didn't think there'd be a compliment for you on this podcast, Michael. You know, we don't actually have anything against Michael Natfalai. It's just, you know, you've got to draw the comedy out of somewhere, and it seems
of course
fair.
You do.
Yeah, he seems
and
like
also,
an easy target.
If it's not through Michael Natfalai, it's through what all the girls are, and what everybody in the series is wearing. You know, every now and again you get a glimmer of Jackie O, you know, or somebody else, and you're just like, oh my God, I remember those clothes. And I love Michael Zemowski when he's in the studio. He sort of leans back in his chair like some kind of like big shot producer, and he's, you know, man spreads, and he's wearing a Mooks t-shirt. Do you remember that brand? Yeah.
Mooks, yeah. I mean, but he seems like the sort of person who's just wearing the Bonds, you know, crew neck thing most of the time anyway.
Totally. Yeah. But I love the fashion. It's so good to watch.
Yeah. One of my favorite bits is it's right near the beginning and everyone has to sort of introduce themselves to the camera.
Isn't that the first time. Fucking stupid.
I know. I mean, actually, Katie Underwood gets really into it. So she's like, hello, my name is Katie Ashley Underwood. I'm a Capricorn and I'm a bit of a freak when it comes to astrology. And it took me a while to work out why they were all saying their star signs, but because I don't really understand astrology and stuff, but I guess for somewhere like New Idea, that would be an indicator of someone's whole personality. Do you think that's
I gather.
What's going
I mean,
on?
I have zero knowledge or interest in astrology. Yeah. And I mean, I wish everybody all the best for people that do. I don't know enough about it to really have an opinion that doesn't seem completely and utterly unfair to people who love it.
Yeah. I'm sort of in the same boat, so we can dodge this topic. But, you know, everyone's free to have their own beliefs, I think. So
yeah, sure. If you want to believe in astrology or, for example, if you want to believe in rocks, you know, watching paint a rock and watching that dry, fine, sure.
Yeah.
Go right ahead.
Have you been reading my diary? I've got that on later today. And then Sally Polaronis, who's 23, from Adelaide.
Yep.
I sort of felt with her, like watching her throughout the episode, she always seems to have – I mean, we've both probably been in choirs or, you know, choruses and stuff in our teenage years. And sometimes you get stuck with the boring harmony line where you're just singing the one note the whole time and everyone else is doing all the fun bits around you. And she just seems to be the one that's always got the sort of
the safe.
With just one kiss, I will blow your mind. Like that harmony line.
She's just got the really safe line. But, you know, you do need that, especially if you've got, you know, five different voices. You really need that consistency. And I think you're right. That's totally what it is.
Yeah, but I was sort of thinking though that at this point you'd sort of, I don't know,
you'd be furious.
Yeah, like in a group of five, you're sort of going, who's going to be the main one? Like, who's going to be the one who gets to stand in the center?
Who's
going to
be
time?
Like the Jerry, the ginger smythe? Who's going to be the star?
Exactly.
You know? And I think actually that's the thing I was thinking, you know, what were the dynamics like? What were they thinking? Were the girls thinking, who is going to be the front man, you know? Because there's always a front man, whether you like it or not, you know. Even modern day bands, you know, like One Direction, it was obvious that Harry Styles was the front man.
Mm.
You know, they say that he wasn't, but he was. And that's kind of the way with these guys. I don't know. It's a bit interesting because, I don't know, I don't think it's who you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
In Bardo.
No.
I love Belinda's little introduction, who clearly is not a fan of doing this little intro to camera.
Yeah.
And she goes, my name is Belinda Barbara Chappell.
Yeah.
And you know,
very sarcastically.
Very sarcastically. She obviously hates it. And later on, I think in the next episode, in episode 7, she says she doesn't like naff stuff. So she's clearly more serious than the others. And she's also the slightly older than everybody. And, you know, she's clearly not into this kind of fluffy kind of kiddie stuff.
Yeah. I think I sort of felt at the time that she wasn't like playing along like the others. But now, like in hindsight, I sort of go, all right, she's just. Well, she's not playing along and she's like I think it's out of maturity rather than
I agree.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. I think at the time it did seem like she was a bit of a bad sport. But I think now, looking back, I'd be thinking at 24, fuck, this is stupid.
Yeah. I'm here to work.
I don't really want to do this dumb little intro. Like, who cares if I'm a Sagittarius or a Capricorn or a fucking Aquarian? That's such dumb bullshit.
Yeah. And then there's Sophie Charlene Ackland.
Sophie Charlene Ackland Monk. And I love that she goes, hello, I'm Sophie Charlene Ackland Monk. I know. As if like, you know, she knows her name is like a long, like random name.
Oh, right. I didn't even clock that.
Which I love. Like she's like, I know. I love it. It's so cute. It's really, really cute. But
yeah.
She just seems quite joyful and happy to be there.
Yeah,
I think.
Exactly. It's not that bad a name as well. Sophie Charlene Ackland Monk.
Yeah.
I suppose it doesn't really roll off the tongue.
Well, no, but how often are you going to say, hi, my name's Sophie Charlene Ackland Monk? I mean, you're going to say, hi, my name's Sophie Monk, aren't you? When Sophie Monk seems to have worked for her.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, if you take the first letter, it's scam. But anyway.
I had never realized that. It is too. It's totally a scam.
That's like such a high school thing. Like, I don't know why people do that. But
I don't know why. And here you are doing it as we approach 40. So good job. Good job, Alex.
Are we approaching 40? I'm still 36.
Okay. Well, you're on the wrong side of 35. So I guess you're heading to 40. Unless you're heading backwards, you've got this, you know, I think it's heading towards 40. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, Sophie Charlene Ackland Monk, 19, a Sagittarius. There's a bit where Michael Napthali shows up with a birthday cake.
Oh, yeah.
And she's wearing, like, she's not even dressed. She's clearly just
Sophie,
jumped out of the shower.
About.
Yeah, Sophie. Yeah, she's just wrapped in a towel. And still the cameras come in. Michael sort of chases her halfway up the stairs and she's sort of half hanging out of the bathroom. It's like, just give her a minute to get
You'd think dressed. You'd think they would have just said, okay, sorry, we've timed this wrong. We're gonna just reset and reshoot this. Like, firstly, I don't know why Sophie's answering the door in a towel to a potential stranger anyway.
Yeah.
Like she's potentially opening it to a serial killer in a towel, but she's left. You can hear the shower running upstairs. So it's a bit random. And then she kind of is like, oh my gosh, you know, no, oh, it's my birthday. Ah, oh, she runs up the stairs, like sort of shocked about it all. The camera crew and Michael just kind of push through in. They come into the house and they're filming everything. It's so weird that they bother to continue filming. It's like, nah, guys, camera down, like stop for a minute.
Yeah.
Let the young girl, the young woman, the 19-year-old, the teenager, let her get dressed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And Michael sort of reaches up and hands her a card or something, and Sophie has to reach down while clutching a towel.
Yeah.
She has to reach down to grab this, you know, birthday card or whatever it happens to be.
Yeah.
And then
just give her a minute.
Yeah, it's so weird. And the next minute they're all kind of downstairs having a, you know, celebrating with this cake that's clearly like, you know, a slightly up-specced Woolworths $5 mud cake.
Yeah.
And it's got sparklers in it. Of course I would too. I love those seeing Sophie trying to blow out the sparklers.
Does she? I didn't notice that.
She tries to blow out the sparklers and one of the girls goes, no, you can't blow them out. And I just love
really?
It so much. I love it so much. I've watched it twice and I just get such a kick out of it.
There's another funny bit in the house actually where a spider arrives. So it's like a biggish huntsman. And who's like... Chantel's freaking out. I think Sally's there freaking out. And there's a lot Belinda of screaming.
Belinda comes in a bit later to kind of save the day a bit.
I'm always the Belinda in this scenario because Belinda sort of comes along and goes, oh, why did you spray it? Now it's going to die. We could have just put it on a broom and put it outside. I'm definitely the let's put it on a broom and put it outside person. And it's just a spider, you know.
It is. It's just a fucking spider. Everyone calm down. I wish it fucking bit somebody.
Who would you want it to bite?
At this point, either Sally or Chantel, who are hysterical. I mean, I will say, you know, I don't want it to bite anybody really, but it would have been funny if it had, just because they were so fucking hysterical.
The other main thing, and this is more to do with their work, but they have a photo shoot. Like, it's kind of like their first photo shoot.
The photo shoot.
And first of all, like, there's this look where they're all in the same white T-shirt and then different jeans, and
that was on the cover of New Idea magazine, that photo, by the way. I bought it, and I think actually, I might be wrong, but I think I have it in a box still. I think I have all of the covers of Bardo that they ever did, and I think I might not have it. I might have got rid of it when I, you know, a couple of years ago when I had to forgive and forget, but I think I still have it. So that all the white T-shirts, that was the cover of New Idea.
Right.
Can confirm.
They do a little to camera thing with Katie, and she's like, oh, I don't really feel like a star. I just feel hot and sweaty.
Yes, I love that. Like, I love they ask Sophie, and Sophie's like, yeah, look, oh, I love it. You know, I love that. I love the makeup, and, you know, I love getting my hair and makeup done. And Katie is far more practical about the experience. You know, she's like, I don't feel like a star yet. It's more hot and sweaty, which I just think is so sensible because it's true. And, you know, you've been in those studios. They're so fucking hot.
Yeah. And it did make me think as well, like, at what point do you feel like a star? Like, sometimes I think about it, you know, if you're having a big moment in your life or, you know, something really exciting is happening. You know, and what if you've got like a stomach cramp or pink eye that day? Like, my favorite example of this is Buzz Aldrin when he was on the moon? Apparently the thing that was sort of attached that he was supposed to wee into disconnected. And so he had to go, and so he just weed in and it ran down into his shoe. Have you heard that?
No, I haven't, but okay.
So here he is having this amazing, like, once in a lifetime, never before done by mankind experience, and there's wee in one of his shoes. So, there really is no such thing as glamour, I don't think. Like,
not really.
You're still a human as you go through it.
I think glamour is a perception, isn't it? Like, it's a, you know, I mean, what's glamorous to one person isn't necessarily glamorous to another. And, Sally has a point where she says in this episode, you know, I don't think it's hit me yet. I think it'll hit me when people start, you know, asking for autographs in the street or, screaming at concerts or whatever. Hmm. And I was thinking, I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, it's work for you. So, like, I don't know. I guess you feel famous because people are screaming your name, but I know it's weird. And I love how you're sitting there trying to, rationalize, you know, for us to figure out, when do you realize you're famous? Like, as if we would fucking know. We have no fucking clue. Do you know what I think would be really fucking hard, actually? And this would be an interesting thing to talk about in the future in greater detail. What it's like to be famous all of a sudden and then all of a sudden not be.
Oh, I want to write a book about this one day.
Yeah, I mean, I think about I'm not specifically pertaining to the girls in Bardo and pop stars, but more specifically I think about some of these dirty, filthy pieces of trash that are on reality television nowadays.
Right, okay.
I mean, some of these absolutely revolting, you know, people, these abominations of mankind that appear on these awful, awful shows, you know, with faces pumped full of plastics and poisons and chemicals, and they've awful, awful, bratty attitudes. And then they're famous for like 2 seconds, and, you know, Who magazine does a little feature spread of them wearing a swimsuit once, and they think they're fucking God. They have 70,000 Instagram followers, and they get sent some fucking tanning lotion every other month to fucking spruik. And then all of a sudden, they're not famous anymore. So what do they do? They just keep flogging a dead horse.
Yeah, exactly. None of them go on to a career like someone like Simon Hot Dogs Deary. Was that his name? He went on to do Up Late with Hot Dogs afterwards.
That's right. He was the guy from Big Brother, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
One of the Big Brothers, yeah.
Yeah, he certainly didn't peter out. He had a long career of that weird scam Up Late show.
Yeah, for like a minute.
Poor Hot Dogs. And back to the photo shoot, there's the awkward moment where the, like, they have to broach the topic of getting the clothes off.
Well, so the thing is, I actually disagree that it's not an awkward topic. The woman, whoever she is, the stylist or whatever she is, it's not even awkward for her. She goes, now I need you to get you into your bra and knickers because we're going to do a photo shoot and we want you to look nude. I mean, there's no ifs, buts, or maybes. The girls clearly haven't been pre-prepared for this. They're literally told on the spot in front of the camera. I mean, two of these girls are 19. I mean, the other two, the other three are, you know, 23 or, you know, they're young. At what point do you kind of think, oh, I'm going to be naked in a photo shoot today? Okay, like you weren't told about it. You're not famous yet, remember? I mean, I have no problem with nudity or photo shoots like that. I mean, I'm fine with it. But what I mean is these are young people who have not really been prepared for all of this and all the talks in the world that they've had with managers, you know, Michael Nathalie or the record label Chris Moss, or, you know, even if they've had the opportunity at this point to chat with somebody like Jackie O, who is at this point, you know, herself an up-and-coming star.
Yeah.
At no point does anybody sort of say to you, you know, you're eventually going to have photos naked. Like,
yeah.
And you're not planning. It's just such a weird thing. They're not famous at this point. It's just like five random girls get naked. And then they all look kind of like unimpressed and nervous and not happy about it. And I think Sally sort of says, my dad won't be happy. And they kind of laugh it off. But obviously they're forced. Well, I presume they're forced to do it because, you know, you would have to deduce if Sally said, look, my dad won't be happy about it. You know, I presume there's been some other argy-bargy from everybody else kind of saying we don't want to do it either.
Yeah.
Then they're kind of forced to do it. And it's so fucking strange because all it ends up being is them wrapped in some ugly, hideous brown blankety cloth
thing. It's the worst material I've ever seen in my life, I think.
It's like a dirty old roll of, you know, bargain bin shit from Lincraft.
It looks like some calico has gone moldy. Yeah,
it's so weird. It sort of seems pointless. But I also just think, you know, this is kind of the bizarre fucked up thing of what was going on in the background with these girls, you know, or with the band and this whole Popstars project product at the time. You know, this was their first photo shoot, you know, that they were doing as a group. And one of the things that somebody somewhere thought was a great idea, let's get these young women naked. They've won a competition about singing, but let's get them naked.
Yeah.
I know the Spice Girls had done a photo shoot not dissimilar, or rather they'd sung a song called Naked on stage at their concert, and they sort of were masked by, like, they were sort of sitting on chairs backwards so you couldn't really see any of the, you know, intimate parts. But in this case, it's just kind of like
– It's just so weird. It's just so sprung on them, and they don't seem to have much of a choice, and it's just sort of like, okay, this is happening now. And, like, one of them – is it even – might be Katie is like, okay, camera's off now, please. Camera's off.
Yeah, and she kind of puts her hand up to the camera and, you know, as if, like, you know, camera's off. Okay, guys, you can go now. The camera doesn't go, though. Like, it's not an immediate cut and then a next scene. It's actually just a pan and then a cut. Then there's a pan and then naked in the blanket.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't see the point for it at all. I just think it's hideous. But anyway, it is what
it is. It's something, you know, if you think you're growing up to be a musician and it's not something they tell you in year 8 tuba lessons, one day you're going to have to be naked.
Yeah. I mean, I think about, like, I've done some weird things in photo shoots, definitely. And one.
Go on.
And I haven't. And there is one photo shoot that I don't know if it will ever see the light of day, and mercifully I hope it probably doesn't, where there is the illusion of me being naked. There's probably some people out there right now Googling, trying to find it. I would hope.
Is that what you're saying? You get a little modesty pouch though, right, don't you? Like a little flesh-coloured sort of
You can have a modesty pouch if you want one, yeah.
Yeah.
But this was in a shower, so it was like a studio thing. It was like an arty thing.
Okay.
You know, when you're a young actor desperate for some money and you'll do anything for some photos and you kind of think, oh, this will be art. And it was. It was all kind of, you know, lit. Like it was you know, kind of like blue and, you know, nighttimey, and it looked quite cool, I think, at the time. It was probably very on brand. But I do think now, like, oh, is there really a choice? I mean, I guess there's a choice. People listening are probably like, oh, there's always a choice. I don't know. I think at some point, you know, you feel like you're kind of a bit shoehorned into things, maybe a little
bit. Right, yeah, yeah.
And maybe convinced that things are going to be a brilliant idea when maybe they're not. I mean, it's not like this. I'm not talking about doing porn or anything. It's not like I did porn. By the way, if I did porn, I'd be perfectly fine and happy to talk about it, but I didn't. But I just mean, you know, young people kind of, you know, being convinced or cuckolded into things, thinking, oh, this is going to be really good, or it's going to be really great, it's going to be arty, it's going to look fantastic in print. I don't know. And I don't think anybody prepares you for it.
One of the big bombshells of this episode is probably one of the biggest bombshells of the whole Pop Stars Australia. And it's the one where Chantal leaves the band. And actually, I think we should tackle like this whole thing as a bigger subject in a later episode. So maybe once we've gone through episode by episode to the finale, we might do a whole like a special, the Chantal, what happened to Chantal special.
Sure. Okay. That's fine. Because
what's presented in the show and what sort of happens in the media afterwards, there's a bit of difference between those two.
Huge difference.
Yeah. But in terms of what happened in the show.
At the time.
Yeah. I feel like throughout the whole episode, they're particularly picking out bits.
Yep.
Like they could have picked out probably bits of anyone being a bit of a diva or a bit tired.
Totally.
But they seem to be focusing particularly on Chantal being exhausted or being asleep or she turns up late.
You know, she's still got problems with the timekeeping and all that kind of thing.
And they're sort of making a big deal out of it. And it's sort of all explained at the end because it's like Michael Napthali is called to an emergency meeting at the house.
At the house, yeah. It's interesting though that to your point, like, you know, there probably were, you know, moments that all of them had that could have been used to sort of spin a story against them. But the thing I guess I come back to is this was early infant reality television where they weren't so nuanced with how they produced these, you know, storylines. You know, shows like The Bachelor, you know, there's one producer to two girls that go on that show. So, I mean, that's pretty intense. You know, there's a lot of production going on in these, you know, storylines, and you know they're able to kind of, you know, really work and massage and flesh out storylines with these reality TV people, contestants or participants. You know, we're talking about really, we're not talking about producers producing a storyline. We're talking about it's just a docuseries that's been filmed. Yeah. Everything's been captured, including this behavior of being late or being asleep on the couch or. Being precocious to the camera or not being able to gel with the older girls or whatever it happens to be. And then it's actually less about the production, I think, and more about, you know, retrospective editing, like, oh, okay, well, let's slot these things in anyway to fit this narrative. It's less like, less done at the time, and it's definitely retrospective.
I mean, at first I sort of thought it was a bit unfair just to how much they pick out of her, but then the fact that she leaves, I feel like they do need to plot it out throughout the episode so it makes sense when she leaves at the end.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing that's wild about this, you know. I would go as far as to say that, you know, Chantal Barry being, you know, leaving Pop Stars Australia is probably one of the most scandalous moments in Australian television history, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it would be, you know, maintained as that, I think, in a lot of people's mind.
Since it's the biggest scandal since Kylie married Jason.
Or that wasn't a scandal. It was maybe more of an exciting shock when Angel got up and out of her wheelchair and walked down the aisle to her marriage to Shane on Home and Away. But anyway, a different podcast for a different time. But it is interesting because, you know, what they have to do in this episode six is retrospectively edit and cram in a narrative about Chantal, whether it's true or not is irrelevant. And it's all happening in one episode. You know, in my memory,
quick.
It is so quick. It's, you know, they've in this one episode, they arrive in Sydney, they start this, you know, new 15-hour-a-day exhausting drill lifestyle they have to do. You hear the songs for the first time without them being named. You meet producers. You see them go into a photo shoot. And you see all these little moments of them. If you think about all the different setups that are in this actual episode, and then at the end of it, Chantal's gone.
Yeah.
And it's this weird thing that it's all happened in one episode. I guess that's because there was no real plan to this whole thing. I mean, it doesn't seem like it anyway. They haven't really plotted it out very sensibly. I don't think. I think they've filmed all the footage and gone up to a certain point before the show started airing when the girls got famous. And they've kind of gone, okay, well, we've got X number of hours of footage. I guess we'll do what we can with it. And this episode, oh, shit, this has happened. We have to now make this episode all about this. We have to fix it.
You know, everyone's very sad as she leaves as
Michael kind of says, you know, to the group, he walks out after having talked to her and he says to the girls, you know, there's been drama and tension and Chantal's felt a bit distant and she thinks it's the best thing for her is for her to leave the group.
Yeah.
And, you know, Chantal kind of awkwardly kind of, you know, shifting her weight and sort of, you know, looking this sort of cutesy kind of Suki Lala little face that she's kind of had going the whole time, this little precocious face, you know, I hope I haven't ruined it for you, you know, you'll make it with or without me. I'll still be buying your albums, you know, it's this weird cutesy thing. And the girls listening to this, they don't look, they look so numb and they look quite like it's ominous. It's very, very ominous to
it
me.
Is,
like
isn't
they're,
it?
They're sitting around like they're expecting something horrific out of this. And clearly that's what happens, obviously, she leaves. But it's very, very uncomfortable to watch, actually.
It is, yeah. And there's even this little, there's a little sort of vox poppy thing with Sophie afterwards. And she's sort of starts talking and then she halfway through, she just kind of goes, actually, I don't want to, can we not do this? Can we not do this now? And she just sort of walks out of the frame.
She's crying. Yeah. And you can hear because her voice sounds quite deep for her and she sounds like she's probably been crying quite a bit. And, you know, she says, you know, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do this bit. Because the question was, I think the question posed to her was by the cameraman was, you know, were there any signs of this? And Sophie just, it's just quite emotional. And what I thought was really interesting is, you know, as she sort of says this, you know, I can't do it. And she goes off camera. I don't want to do this bit. A little bit later, you get Belinda. They do a bit with Belinda. And she really gives this you know, really nice, succinct soundbite, kind of wraps it all up in a little package about, you know, well, you know, if you don't, you know, we all want to be here. So, you know, it's really important and, you know, we wish her all the best and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's a really nice, crisp little soundbite. Clearly, yeah. I assume what they've done is they've asked Sophie or whoever else for a moment, for a soundbite. And ultimately, Belinda, ever the practical one, the sensible one, the mature one, she obviously just goes, you know what, I'll do it, yes. And then she follows the letter of the law and she says exactly what she's got to say.
Yep.
And, you know, you can see when she's speaking to the camera, her eyes are kind of darting around quite a bit. She's obviously like looking into the camera, at the cameraman, at somebody else who's obviously behind the cameraman. I think it's like a bit of a confidence thing about making sure she's covering off all the points. And you're kind of like, okay, well, reliable Belinda Chappell, you know, probably saved the day. She was MVP, I think, of that moment.
Yeah, I think so too. I think hers is also the next day as well, maybe. So everyone's had time to think
probably.
About it. Probably. I don't know. Yeah. So I guess the band is down to four by the end of the episode. And the really big question is, who's going to get the big room in the share house now that Chantel's gone? I was thinking through all that, like there's something about Chantal that her personality is just different. And she's not like Belinda's not playing the game that much as in she's not up for any of the shenanigans and she just wants to get on with the job. Whereas Chantal's the other way and she's sort of pushing the boundaries a little bit, I think. And I just feel like sometimes Australia doesn't love this and Australia just wants its celebrities to be like squeaky clean and have perfect PR and they don't want anyone who's a bit different. Whereas like a British star or even American ones, I think like they're allowed to have their foibles a bit more and they're not like in a way they're a bit celebrated sometimes for not being perfect.
I think I think that's a long straw to draw in reference to Chantal Barry in Popstars and Bardo. I don't disagree with you about that Australian culture and the celebrity culture in Australia and what we expect of our celebrities. But, you know, and maybe it was just the footage that we saw, but, you know, in this episode, you know, Chantel's saying, you know, she's asked by Michael Zemowski to sing a certain part of the song and she's like, I don't want to sing that today. You know, she doesn't want to, she only wants the single room. She doesn't want to share a room. Sophie gets the single room, but she cracks it. So Sophie gives her the single room.
Yeah.
You know, she can't do her own sheets. You know, she, you know, can't, she's screaming hysterically about the spider. You know, she's the one who clearly is intended, whether it's true or not, to look like she's the weaker dancer in a scene that's voiced over by Anna Kiprios talking about who's, some of the girls have it, some of the girls don't have it, you know, and I'm not saying that it's not necessarily because of the editing, because maybe it is, but I don't know that Chantel's individuality that you're referencing and your personality and all that is necessarily such that would be embraced like a British or an American individual sort of star.
Yeah.
And I think you're absolutely right though, 100,000,000%, that's probably a minisode waiting to happen, talking about, you know, how we need our stars, our TV stars especially, to be a certain type of homogenized person. And actually, This is a conversation. We may have even had it before in the past. I have it with a lot of people about that cookie cutter and that polished kind of expectation we have of our actors and TV people.
So, I mean, I'm even struggling to think of anyone who isn't really part of that from the Australian sort of celebrity oeuvre. But, I mean, the ones that come to mind, I guess AC/DC is sort of, you know, in their own little basket. But Michael Hutchins is one that I think was really quite individual and, you know, he was allowed to be a tortured soul and he was introspective and rough around the edges and that's why I think he's still such a big like presence, not only in Australia, but like internationally. Like people still think of INXS, I think, as this amazing like pop sensation. And it's really, a lot of it's like, apart from the songwriting, you know, a lot of it's down to his charisma and his presence. And I also think it's down to him not being this like perfect kind of, I came off the production line sort of personality.
I mean, maybe. I mean, in terms of the Australian celebrity ether, you know, who does or doesn't have that kind of individuality and who is or isn't celebrated for it. I mean, I think you could have a look back 20, 30 years or even today and you can kind of see people who try something different and how they're rewarded and people who don't and how they're rewarded, or people who, you know, what is embraced and what is not is probably a better way of saying it. And, I think there's a whole many different things that come into it, but probably economics is the biggest one, you know, selling records or selling advertising or selling magazine pages. But, you know, I often think about things like, and this is an example that perhaps you'll roll your eyes at, but hear me out about this.
Yeah.
For example, Kylie and Danny Minogue in terms of pop stars and pop music, and we're just specifically because we're talking about pop music here with Bud O, you know, Kylie, you know, was really embraced and hit it really huge with songs produced by Stock Aitken Waterman. And that was really that biggest time for her in that late 80s period before she tried to do things differently and kind of tanked. You know, she had this real lull in her career where she tried to do something different and something more unique and nuanced and unusual. And that was at the time when she was, you know, dating Michael Hutchins, interestingly. Right, And then it wasn't until, you know, she'd kind of, you know, come back and she had some, I mean, obviously she had relative success with work in the meantime, but it wasn't until she came back with that album at the end of the 90s, the beginning of the new millennium, before, which was more of a traditional pop disco sound, that she kind of came back again.
It's funny how different our perspectives on this are, because I was always like, oh, Kylie, you know, whatever, fluff. And then she does the Nick Cave duet in the sort of a slightly before that, I think, probably about 97. And that's where I really went, okay, so Kylie's not just this, you know, this pop star thing. She's got depth and moodiness, you know.
Yeah, that's right. In the middle of the 90s, you know, she did the duet with Nick Cave, you know, Where the Wild Roses Grow. And she did she had the album Confide in Me, or Kylie Minogue Confide in Me, and she did the album Impossible Princess, that's what it was called in Australia, but it was renamed in Britain because Princess Diana had just passed away.
Oh, right.
And if you listen to that, it's really experimental, and she works with Japanese DJs and, you know, she does something with Tower Tay and she does German Bold Italic. She has this really, you know, interesting sound, a lot of acoustic stuff with like cowboy style and, you know, some really interesting sounds that I think typically you wouldn't associate with Kylie Minogue, but it wasn't really embraced as much unless you were a Kylie purist or someone that, you know, really, really loves her diehard. And I think the other person is, you know, that's a good point of reference is Danny Minogue. You know, early on in her career, you know, her focus was dance music. And I think, you know, those early hits of Danny Minogue's were really big hits because they were dance music. And then I think as dance music changed in the 90s and evolved and, you know, house music went in and out and sort of changed in its way, you know, so did kind of Danny Minogue's credibility in Australia, irrespective of whether or not she was any good or not. It just, her popularity, you know, was kind of questioned and compared to her sisters. And I don't know, I think they're both a really interesting example of what we expect of our celebrities.
My counterpoint would be to measure Kylie against someone like Madonna from
Oh yeah,
like the US. And for some reason, Madonna's allowed to have this like, you know, badass attitude, you know. Whereas I don't think if Kylie tried to go and do, you know, be the baddie in the Dick Tracy movie, I don't think anyone would be into it, you know.
Yeah, I think that's true. But I think if you know, Madonna from the very beginning of her career was controversial, and she also said, you know, she didn't hold back. She said what she wanted to say, and she was quite happy to be confrontational and, you know, be provocative. Kylie was never necessarily provocative, you know, from the get-go. You know, it was fairly saccharine and sweet and sugary, really, from the very, very beginning and the outset. And I guess it's a model that kind of worked for her. And I guess the outlandish kind of outspoken, you know, persona of Madonna kind of worked for her in some ways. I mean, some people don't like it, some people do.
Yeah.
And you'd have potentially, you'd argue today that Madonna might need to reassess her approach to her career and fame today.
Oh, I think she's done all right.
No, I mean today, like now, how she is today. Not retrospectively, because, you know, she's unparalleled, Madonna.
Yeah.
But I mean more recently today.
And I feel like I need to go and do another podcast about Oasis versus Blur just to cleanse myself a little bit here.
Listen, you're doing a podcast about Bardo, so you can talk about fucking Madonna and Kylie and Danny Minogue, you know. And you talk about Clueless every episode, so shut the fuck up. Who the hell are you kidding? Everybody else listening at home is like, yeah, Alexander, that's right. You fucking tell him. Shut up, Blur and Oasis. Who gives a shit? Blur who? Whatever.
Oh, well, big episode. I mean, we are definitely going to have to circle back onto the whole Chantel media storm.
We surely are.
Because it was, you were right when you said earlier, it was just such a major point in TV history. And I think people, even to this day, are still wondering exactly what went on, I reckon.
I think people know because it came out in the ID magazine. And I think, and also Chantel spoke about it not too long ago, I don't think a couple of years ago.
Oh, right.
From now. And I think people have kind of commented on it. But, yeah, I think at the time it was kind of a bit of a mystery. And maybe some people don't know still.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's a good reason to subscribe and tune in. And
it is.
Yeah. If anyone's listening and they haven't subscribed, you just go and hit the subscribe button. It's boring, but it helps out our algorithm. Did you know that? And then we'll be able to get some more ad money.
I didn't know that. I gathered. But I'm not the brains of this operation. I'm the beauty. So I leave all of that stuff to you.
So everyone, please go and subscribe. It's very important. We have a little link as well to our Acast support page. And if you know, subscribing is the easiest way to support us, I guess. But if you want to send us some cash, then there's a little link in the description. And then there's, of course, our Instagram, which is at Fruity Alexia Podcast.
It is at Fruity Alexia Podcast.
Are there underscores in there? No.
No.
No underscores. All one word. And not to be confused with any other Fruity Alexias on there. I think there might be a couple. Well, what are you going to do for the rest of your day?
I need to quickly eat something, and then I need to probably do another episode with you.
Yeah, I mean, a little peek behind the curtains for today. I think we're going to bank a couple of episodes and then, so
We're at least banking this today and one more probably.
Yeah, I reckon,
just because we've got to get at least a little bit ahead in the event of, you know, me being taken down with COVID after, well, like I was last week with my COVID vaccine. Oh, I was so sick. So we need to just work around that.
Future-proof ourselves, you know.
We do. I mean, we had a late episode drop on Friday last week. I had three people message me to be like, where's your episode? It's not up. And I was like, oh, orcs. Yeah. I didn't realize people were that keen, but I love that people are keen. It's fantastic.
I know, it's good. It means people are listening. Great.
There's demand, supply and demand. You demand Fruity Alexia and we will supply it to you.
Well, on that note, should we run away and start on the next ep then?
We absolutely shall.
Okay. Oh, well, for this week anyway, goodbye, everybody.
See you later. Can you feel it? I hate adults who are silly, like, meow. I'm like allergic to silly, like cutesy, silly adult shit. Like I hate it. One of my friends says like, oh, do you want to meet up for brekkie? And I'm like, it's fucking breakfast. Stop calling it brekkie. Like you're a 43-year-old man. Stop calling it brekkie.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.